Welcome to this special presentation of Bait and Switch Podcast Sports, a wholly owned subsidiary of the Bait and Switch Podcast.
Any other use of this podcast or descriptions or accounts of this broadcast without the consent of the Bait and Switch Podcast is strictly prohibited.
Welcome back to the Bait and Switch Podcast. It's Chris Beyer. We got a full house here tonight for the 2024 Giro d'Italia Tour of Italy podcast. We've got Mitch Tyke on Zoom. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, Mitch, you might know Mitch from our, he is this season's announcer for the beginning of all the podcasts.
I feel like I should talk like this for the rest of the podcast.
We've got Jim Martin, who won't be saying a whole lot because he's not a big cycling guy.
Nope. Also, I'm giving you guys the mics tonight. You know what? I kicked your butts in the last one, so I'm kind of taking this one off.
Yeah, we after we get done with our podcast for every of these cycling-related podcasts, we do a little fantasy picking, and Jim, in his main voyage, won last year's Vuelta.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we got local cycling legend Tom Schuler, who was in the Giro d'Italia. That was 2010, was it, Tom, or when was that?
I think it was last year. 1985. What are we?
1985. None of us were born at that
40 time. 40 years ago. Oh, my God.
If only I weren't born in 1985.
Yeah. You were just, not to minimize it, but you were just in it once, were you?
Yeah, just the one time.
Part of 7-Eleven?
Yep, that's correct.
That is one more time than any of the rest of us have been.
Yeah, combined. All of us combined. The fabled 7-Eleven team, which was America's first foray into European cycling, right?
That is correct. That was our first Grand Tour.
Okay.
And then we were regulars at the Tour de France and the Giro, but that 85 was our first Grand Tour.
Right, right. And so, yeah, like I said, that was at a time where Americans just didn't go over and compete in the biggest races in the world until then. At least there was a first American-based team.
Sponsored team by 7-Eleven stores.
So Tom Schuler, and then last but not least, my son, Will Beyer.
Thank you for not calling me least. I really appreciate that.
No, Will keeps right up with us. I don't know. He hasn't followed it quite as much, but once he gets a look at the start list, he'll know what he's talking about. Let's talk about a couple non-Giro topics first here a little bit, and then we'll get into the race. The Tour de France is going to be a little different this year because there was a major crash in the Tour of Basque Country here recently involving three of the major four contenders for this year's Tour. Evenepoel to a moderate extent, Vingegaard to a large extent, and Roglic to a lesser extent were injured. Tom, you're a race organizer. What can there be done or what should be done? Anything else regarding rider safety? Does that crash teach us anything or not?
You know, it's, yeah, and they took that crash off the air like was appropriate. So I saw the ditch that they landed in, and that was the issue. Generally, you know, when you slide on asphalt, you really don't get hurt. You lose some skin, but you don't break a lot of things generally. It's when you hit something solid, like we saw in the Tour des Alpes a few days ago when Harper hit that light pole.
Not Jim's wife, by the way.
Yeah.
Different Harper.
And he hit something solid. So that is the issue. And in that instance, just, you know, ill timing, they all slid and landed in a weird concrete ditch.
And if you saw it, there was also some very large boulders next to the ditch. Mitch saw it. And, I mean, these were big boulders. I got to think that this particular turn should have been known as a potential hazard. I think they dropped the ball a little bit with this one. I don't know how many turns there were, but this one was particularly bad. Not in the sense that it was that terrible of a turn, but just the road furniture was really something on the side of this road.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things. There's obviously when you're in the Alps and you're on the side of a cliff, you can't do a lot.
Right.
You know, on a corner. But in something where there's a stationary object like a boulder, there may have been something they could have done. Mm-hmm. I haven't looked at it. Obviously, in the races we manage, like the Tour of America's Dairyland, we do lapped races, and we do put padding on the most obvious light poles and fences and anything that has a higher chance of doing some damage. So they're going to have to look at that on a case by case basis, but it gets tough to cordon off or to protect when you're doing these point to point races.
Yeah. From an organizer standpoint, I mean, it really does speak to the challenge of, you know, covering hundreds and thousands of kilometers over the course of a race. There's just, you know, only so many eventualities you can prepare for.
And, yeah, you know, it's a random thing when someone slides at the exact place and hits their head or hits their chest, or in this case, I'm not sure what those riders hit, but it's a tough, tough call.
Bunch of ribs and collarbones and things like that. What was I going to say? Oh, is it on the riders? Maybe, you know, I heard it speculated on that particular course. There was no reason for these guys to be going four wide into this turn. It wasn't a particularly hot point in the race. And I also heard that there might have been roots on the road, caused some bumps. Jim had a post on Facebook today talking about baseball pitchers maybe throwing too hard. Are biking speeds getting too high with these bikes being so advanced? You know, how much of this is on the riders that they should ride more prudently?
Well, I want to put forth two theories. And I'll take it all the way back to my day. When in my day, the older patrons would yell at younger riders, no matter how good they were, for being dangerous in the corners. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two was the attitude was, don't risk it on the corners because this is our living. You got to go to work tomorrow. And racers back then raced more days than they do now. Let's look at two things. Young riders that are super talented, Evenepoel, even Pogacar, they're so talented that they are the stars of the team. No older rider with wisdom is going to tell those riders what not to do. That's number one.
That's a good point.
Number two that I think is way more important is, unfortunately, crashes are part of the sport, and they actually make good drama on television.
Yeah.
Whether it's automobiles or bikes. And the riders, I don't think, get in trouble like they should for causing crashes or being part of a crash because it's talked about a lot on television. It's probably good for ratings. That's a theory that I've thought a lot about. Why are there more crashes? Why are riders taking bigger risks? Well, because it doesn't pay a penalty like it did in my day, I think.
Right. All right. I'm going to throw this out to Will here. Oh, Jim's got something to say.
I have a quick question from somebody who, you know, obviously doesn't know as much as you guys, but is this going to affect the interest in something like the Tour de France?
Yeah, it could. Mm-hmm. It could. And that's yet to be seen. We've got our, no spoiler, Jim, we got our Tour de France podcast coming up here. But one or more of those guys could be out of the tour because of this. And you take away some star power, yeah, it could hurt the race. Yeah,
I hope it doesn't hurt our ratings, though.
Yeah, no.
Right, that's no. Important thing, right?
All right, let me talk about a little bit different topic. Over the years, I've heard it stated that maybe the calendar needs to change a little bit. There's always this talk of reducing the Giro and the Vuelta to maybe 2 weeks instead of three. I'm going to throw out, I don't know if I like that idea, but I could see maybe an eventuality where it might have to take place. I'm going to throw out two ideas if it was to come to that. Friday start instead of a Saturday start, add another day. And let's get rid of these rest days. No rest days. These guys are riding anyway. Why not just have a 80-kilometer sprint day where no time is taken, just so these guys are riding so there's a show for the day? Will, do you think it should be reduced from 3 weeks to 2 weeks? And what do you think about my idea?
I think, you know, specifically about the rest days, if you want to disclude rest days from the race calendar, I think you have to shorten it to 2 weeks. With a 3 week race, you really need those breaks in between for the riders. You can't push them even harder because, you know, we've just been talking about rider safety. Mm-hmm. If they're even more tired out on the course, it's going to be, you know, risks taken that don't pan out. And that could, you know, lead more injuries,
yeah,
more crashes.
Tom, you rode in a era of no rest days. It's sometimes two a days. How important do you think rest days are?
Well, yeah, and the Giro I rode had two rest days.
Oh, they did.
Like it does now. It's okay. You know, the traditions in the sport are famous, and that's why it's 3 weeks. It has to get all the way around Italy and try to get to as many nooks and crannies to sell more newspapers.
Right.
And yeah, same with the Tour de France and the Vuelta a España. So can it go to two weeks? Maybe, but then it diminishes the Vuelta, and it clearly diminishes the Vuelta and the Giro to number two and three status, where the Italians at least think they're number one during the Giro.
Yeah, I was going to, you know, make point of that with the Giro and the Vuelta. If you bring those down to 2 weeks, it kind of feels like you have to put it together with the Tour de France, and there's no way they're getting rid of the Tour de France in 3 weeks.
No.
Anytime soon, certainly. And so if you want to call all three of those grand tours, you got to kind of keep them the same in a way.
Yeah. The key to what's going on in the sport is how are television ratings doing, mostly in Europe where the most of the fans are. And I don't know that. I'll tell you, as a fan, you know, the television coverage is much better, I mean, than it used to be. So, I mean, to watch a race now is, and all the camera angles and the way those cameras get in there is just incredible. So I got to think the European fans are feeling the same way, and they have an appetite for a lot of cycling. So if it sells, they'll keep it at 3 weeks.
Yeah. And I would just add that with the kind of rise of the riders' unions, there would be a real concern about which stages you take away. Do you take away the opportunities for the sprinters? Do you take away the opportunities for the climbers or the all arounders? So I mean, it would really change the dynamic of the race, and it's sort of hard to imagine it happening at this point. You know, there are probably people out there that would like to. Would like to see these as 4 week races.
Yeah, I keep hearing the push, you know, every year it maybe gets a little bit stronger that these two races might need to curtail by a week. I would imagine I'm not necessarily for it, but if they did, I would think any reduction in stages would be proportional, you know, one less this, one less that. So anyway, let's leave it at that. Let's talk about this year's Giro, the Giro d'Italia 2024. The odds makers, I don't think I've seen an odds as, is it low or high? I don't know what the word is for one particular rider in a race. It's Tadej Pogacar, however you say his name, from the UAE team is as big a favorite for this race as I think I've seen in any race in quite some time.
You could make the case that it might actually just be a 2 week race this year, even though they'll continue racing after the second week, because Pogacar could have really a lead that realistically can't be caught.
Well, Will, you're looking here at the odds makers things here right now. Do you think, barring a crash or an illness, can Pogacar be beaten by this crew of riders here?
You know, looking at the top people on this odds, we have Thomas and Caruso. We have some Bardet's up here. We have some pretty old people, and O'Connor, you know, who just crashed. I don't think, even, you know, considering how great Pogacar is, he doesn't have a lot of the best competition, and we all know he's going to be attacking almost every single day he can.
At least, like you said, for that first week. Who knows? Maybe the last 2 weeks he'll just take it easy in preparation for the tour and ride this kind of as a prep ride. Tom, again, any scenario short of crash or illness where Pogacar can lose this race?
I can't see it short of a illness or a crash. I mean, he can win it on, there's two time trials. I think they're like 40K and 30K. He can win it with those two time trials and just follow.
Right.
He can win it on any of the six mountaintop finishes and just follow. And the one thing he needs to do is he really wants to win the tour. He wants to do the double, and you only have so much energy over the course of a year. So he's got to be aware of conserving. So I don't think we'll see they're racing on the roads of Strada Bianchi during, I think it's state six of this year's Giro. He loves that stage. He could go and attack with 80 kilometers to go and blow everyone away.
Right.
But that doesn't serve him for later in the year. And so it'll be interesting to see. We know he's going to ride the time trials hard. Mm-hmm. And he'll have the leader. He should have the leader's jersey after at least the first or the second time trial. And then his team will have to defend. So, no, barring crashes or illness, I don't see how he can't win.
Was that barring or Bahrain?
Bahrain.
Oh, okay.
Bahrain has what Paul
nicely played.
Well, I'm quite sure. Mitch, let me ask you this here quick, Mitch. Should Pogacar drop out of the Giro and concentrate on the tour now in light of these injuries?
Geez, I don't think so. I think including the Giro and his Palmares, you know, especially because he doesn't have truly, I mean, you know, he has world-class competitors, but I don't think there are other teams with the firepower that UAE has. Ineos Grenadiers is bringing a pretty good team. The start list still needs to be filled out on some of the other teams. But I would think that it's not going to be an incredible challenge for UAE to defend a decent lead for Pogacar. I could understand the argument for dropping out and preparing for the tour, but honestly, I think he can kind of serve both purposes and still win the Giro.
Same question for Will.
I mean, just, You already asked that question, but
okay, sure. Go
yeah, on. I just had a fun little question to pose. So, with a weakened field in the Giro and the Tour, if Pogacar conserves his energy well, is there a Vuelta for him?
Yeah, the triple.
we all know he wants it, you know.
Yeah, Pogacar. I mean, it's a cliche now, but whenever he races to win. He has raced 10 days this year. And he's won 7 times. This is unheard of. This guy, you know, races to win every time. This, you know, we talked about this in the past. He is the closest to rivaling Eddie Merckx potentially throughout his career and becoming, you know, the Michael Jordan of this sport. You know, should he bite off all that stuff? Tom, should he go for everything?
So, 2 points. You know, he always races to win. So he's raced 10 times this year. In a normal year, he would have already raced probably 25 to 30 days at this point. So you can tell what he's doing already. He's adjusted his schedule and he's trying. He's only 25 years old. He doesn't know exactly how his body responds to everything. So he's trying the old method where a lot of the tour riders would ride the Giro as, quote, preparation. But they didn't ride the way Pogacar rides. They would ride, the races were raced a lot differently, where on a sprint day, you'd ride easy till the last hour. The stages are raced this way now. And also, the teams don't race much harder from the gun. So, I mean, to race the Vuelta is a really interesting concept. But by the time he gets to the Vuelta, I mean, I think he races, I don't know if he even has a race between now and the Giro. So the Giro is 21 days. The Tour is 21 or 2 days. That's 43. He's raced 7. He'll be at 50 race days by the end of the Tour. You know, Eddie Merckx used to race, I don't know, Mitch, how many? 100?
I have probably 120.
He's not racing between now and the Giro. I heard that. He's not racing.
That's incredible.
Start with the Giro. And also, let's throw in this. The Olympics are this year, right? So that might be another target for him. So, Will, let's talk about contenders, of which it's kind of a sorry field here. There really isn't much to it. The Giro usually
don't tell Geraint Thomas that.
Yeah, the Giro usually has the weakest field of the three for the reason we just talked, which is people are afraid to ride it because of the upcoming tour. The Vuelta, there's kind of that, you know, it's the last thing of the year, and so a lot of people will get. So the field is usually pretty light here. Last year's runner-up to Primoz Roglic, who won last year, Geraint Thomas kind of surprised me how strong he was last year. Haven't seen a whole lot from him. Will, is he getting a little long in the tooth?
I mean, we've said he's been getting long in the tooth for years at this point, and we've seen a lot of other people on Ineos, you know, go through that same cycle. So I don't entirely know what his schedule usually looks like for the start of the year, but I haven't really seen him do many races before Grand Tours. And so I think this is just a par for the course. I think he can still, keep with certainly this weakened field. I don't think he's keeping with Pogacar, but he can keep with the other, odds favorites.
He is second favorites in odds. You see it's potential him for getting second.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Ineos, now again, one thing for our listeners is we don't have a full start list here. We got about a 80% start list. I got to look at Ineos's one, but Ineos is the backup there. Guy might be Arnsman. Speaking of crashes, he had a particularly bad crash last year, maybe in the Welta, I forget. Mitch, Ineos, anybody other than Thomas going to be their leader?
Well, I mean, just exactly the guy you said, Timon Arnsman, is kind of a dark horse to compete in the general classification. But if Geraint Thomas struggles early on, he seems like he would be the guy to pick up the slack. But whether he's fit and is going to be a guy who can keep it up over the course of 3 weeks, hard to say.
Tom,
especially trying to chase down Tadej Pogacar.
Yeah, Tom, what do you know about this guy that's fourth on odds? Tiberi, the only thing I know about him is he got in trouble for torturing a cat. I think that's the only thing I know about him. And every now and then I see his name crop up. He's fourth in odds. Is that a deserved fourth in your eyes?
Well, again, if you watched the Tour des Alpes like I did, you saw a couple things. One is Geraint Thomas rode in service of Tobias. He was a
Foss.
Tobias Foss,
who had the leader's jersey and wasn't going to win the race, but it allowed Geraint to not be the team leader. Not to be the team leader, but do the prep work for 5 days in the mountains. And that's what he did last year to support Theo Gegenhardt, mm-hmm. who did win the Tour des Alpes mm-hmm. and has since left Ineos. But my point is that, Geraint Thomas is a pro in preparing himself. Mm-hmm. So he gave himself a nice tune-up. He saw where he was. He'll do the work he needs to do. He will be, at the end, I don't know when, I didn't look when those time trials are, but because of those two long time trials, and if he doesn't have a bad day in the mountains, he's going to be in the mix, right?
Right.
And then back to Tiberi, he looked really good in the Tour des Alpes, and he and Wout Poels, another rider long in the tooth, mm-hmm. Were really fun to watch because they were both made the final selections in the high mountains, and they were counterattacking each other. So, he's a rider on the way up, and we're looking for those riders like Chan Uderbrooks and Tiberi that we haven't seen a lot of because they're going to get better. We just don't know when they're going to make that breakthrough.
The Tour of Alps, which just happened here last week, the podium was Juan Pedro Lopez from Lidl Trek. Who was second and third in that race? Do you know?
Ben O'Connor and indeed it was Tiberi.
Okay. All right. So you got Tiberi up there. Juan Pedro Lopez, he led the Giro for about a week or so, 2 years ago, I think. And he won this smaller warm-up race. Do you see him, Mitch, top five, top three, top 10?
Top 10 for sure. I think, the Tour of the Alps is a lot different race than the Giro. And I guess I don't really know his time trialing ability. I mean, that's, there are two individual time trials in there, stage 7 and stage 14. And those could really separate the field quite a bit. And so I guess I don't know enough about Juan Pedro Lopez to know how he's going to compete with some of those the big engines that are so good at time trialing.
Yeah, and relative to those time trials, they're not short time trials. Sometimes a Giro might have one 30-kilometer time trial. This has two. One is in the 40 kilometers and the other is in the 30s. So that's not 100 kilometers of time trialing, but it's more than Grand Tours often have nowadays.
Yeah. Will, let's talk about some of the old timers here. Again, we're not sure about form here. We got Damiano Caruso, who came in second a couple of years ago. We got Bardet. You can talk about what he just did here recently. And then we got the return of Nairo Quintana for Movistar. what would be a good result for these guys, or a realistic result for these guys?
Well, I just want to talk on the odds sheet. Caruso is around tied for third with Tiberi. They're on the same team. I think it's going to be interesting to see who takes the lead there. Mm-hmm. They're also both Italian, if that makes any difference. You know, they Giro d'Italia.
Yeah, the highest placed Italian is something to fight for.
Yeah, and so if they're teammates, you know, that's going to be an interesting struggle to see who wants it more, the young one or the old one. But with Bardet, he got second in what was it?
Liège-Bastogne-Liège.
Liège. He got second in Liège not too long ago behind aforementioned Pogacar, which you know, I was watching it. The commentators were noting it was basically a win for him because there's no beating Pogacar. He launched, you know, with 50, 40K to go. And with Quintana, I didn't even see him on Movistar. I thought he was still on Arkea. But that's bound to be interesting back on, you know, his old team. He hasn't ridden a lot recently, has
he? There was a doping issue with him, and he was kind of out of the sport, but out of the European peloton for a couple of years.
And I believe he's had a significant crash in the spring as well. So I think there's some question about his fitness.
Okay, I didn't know that. Yeah. Tom, how about O'Connor, Martinez, Utebrooks? Who do you like for that?
I mean, Danny Martinez, Ben O'Connor, Chan Utebrooks. You guys mentioned Caruso, of course. Those are all, you know, top 10 riders, could be podium riders, all of them, but it's so hard to tell. You know, we're looking for riders whose form is coming up. To me, Bardet is really interesting because that guy can fight and suffer, and he's smart, and he knows where to be, but he's not going to win the Giro, of course. but he always is fun. He's either going for the stage wins, and he'll always be in the mix. And then, again, Ben O'Connor. So it looks like there's three on Bahrain. I only have a list of five, but between Tiberi, Caruso, and Wout Poels, you have three riders that can be, you know, at least in the second group, minimal, if not in the first group on some days. So I think, you know, there's a lot of those sort of mid-range riders, but just no one that's going to challenge Pogacar in any way, shape, or form.
Mitch, I'm not that familiar with the route. How many sprint stages do they think there are? Do you know that number?
I believe they're talking about six bunch sprints.
Is that what you got?
That'll be likely. You know, I'm just looking at my list.
I'll give you now. Last year, the breakout performer was Jonathan Milan. Is it Jonathan? He was riding for a different team last year. What was it?
An Italian team.
And then he went on to Lidl Trek.
Yep.
And, of course, Trek is the Wisconsin-based team here. And Lidl is kind of a grocer in Europe. They're the title sponsor. Milan was the big breakthrough. I'm going to rattle off some sprinters here and tell me who's going to be the breakthrough this year. Groves, Canner, Welsford, Van Poppel, Viviani, I think he's past his prime. Yeah. Germay, Hoy, Milan, Mirlet, Milano, Dainese. What do you think, Mitch? Who do you like out of that group?
I like Mirlet, and I know Germay has something to prove because he got off to, I believe it was in this year or last year, a really good start, and then had to withdraw with that really unlikely, unfortunate injury.
Well, was it a saddle sore or something? I forget. What was it?
He was the one that got hit in the face with a champagne cork, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, two people got hit in the face with a champagne cork. Not the same cork. It wasn't like the Kennedy assassination.
Right, exactly.
He got the, you know, down and to the left. Yeah.
That would be impressive at that point. But.
Yeah. This year, if I got to pick somebody that's going to – Mirlet is not a stranger to the top of the Grand Tour field. If I got to pick somebody that's going to win their first Grand Tour stage, I'll throw out Coy. Coy has been bubbling under for a couple of years. He's probably 23, 24, 25 now. I think this is his first Grand Tour shot. He's on the hugely talented Visma Lisa bike team, so they don't get too many shots. I think he's going to win his first Grand Tour stage. Tom, what about somebody else that might win their first Grand Tour stage, sprinter or otherwise?
Oh, that is a tough one. I haven't studied as much, but you know, we've got guy. Well, Caden Groves. It's hard to believe. I mean, he is a rider that could win their first. And Olaf Coy hasn't won a stage in a Grand Tour.
No, I don't think so.
Jonathan Milan. I mean,
Caden Groves has won stages in the Vuelta, maybe the Giro. Actually, the Giro, wasn't it last year? Anyway,
so Jonathan Milan, if you watched him in Flanders and a couple of the prep races, he was right there helping his Lidi Trek teammates.
Pedersen.
Mads Pedersen, who won, not what did he win? Gent-Wevelgem.
Gent-Wevelgem.
But anyway, the point is, you know, he's taken his riding to the next level. So it's in Italy. Mm-hmm. So I pegged Milan for a stage. Fabio Jakobsen just won yesterday in the Tour of Turkey. Mm-hmm. He's on the list.
He's not on the short list yet. He's DSN. You see him on the DSN? How many?
I see him. Yeah,
he's.
Oh, I take that back. I didn't write it down. Okay, you're right.
So he's. So you've got about. I mean, I saw that the Australian Pocket Rocket.
Caleb Ewan.
He's on the list, but no one's even talking about him he's a couple bike lengths back. We've got about six of those really good sprinters. Merlier is going to win a stage. Jakobsen, with his form, he won yesterday in the Tour of Turkey. He's a good shot to win a stage. We talked about Milan, Hoy. So there's, you know, there's about a half dozen really good sprinters. So,
all right, well, let's start getting towards the end of this podcast here. Let's talk about who's going to win. Anybody want to say anybody other than Pogacar for the win? I'm not going to say it. I think he's going to win.
It's not going to be me. No.
No, I think if you're going to say anybody but Pogacar, you have to accept the idea either Pogacar is going to crash or he's going to, you know, withdraw at the end of the second week. And yep. I'm not ready to say either of those things.
Tom, you want to go on a limb?
So Pogacar versus the world, I'll take Pogacar.
Yeah.
I'll put my reputation in the line.
Jim's going to go.
Jim's going with Chris Froome, isn't he?
Right, yeah. Where is he?
Have you considered Contador?
There's been a lot of, dare I say, boring races this year. Now, if you like excellence, if you like domination, then this is your year. You got Vanderpool just blowing everybody away in Flanders, blowing everybody away at Roubaix. You got Pogacar at Liège. Do you like dominance or does it bore you?
Well, for my money, I think the interesting parts of, I mean, first of all, it will be interesting to see if Pogacar can, you know, really break the field early on. I'll be curious to see how he climbs on Stelvio, because that's just such an iconic hill and so long. But I'll be interested in the ones that aren't really contested by Pogacar, the watching the people who go stage hunting and see somebody kind of, you know, see Julian Alaphilippe go for a stage win or Caruso, for example. It'll just be, we'll have to kind of pick our exciting moments, and the bunch sprints will be fun to watch. But in an era where Pogacar is really dominating and doesn't have real solid competition for the GC, you know, this does figure to be maybe less exciting than some in years past.
Tom, you raced at an era. Now, was Merckx, was he done riding when you were starting riding, or was he wrapping up his career?
Yeah, I never overlapped with him. Yes, I was maybe 4 to 5 years after his last race.
Now, of course, you were probably in the cycling milieu at the time when he was still riding. You look back on his era like, oh, this grand era, but was he viewed in the same way? Was he viewed as too dominant? Was there a backlash against Merckx?
You know, I don't know why it was different. You know, maybe our sports heroes, you know, Babe Ruth, Mickey Mantle, were different back then. I just don't know. But no, I don't remember people talking about the dominance is bad for the sport. Maybe it's because we didn't see every minute of a bike race. We read about them in newspapers.
More romantic, and
now. You know, when Pogacar attacks with 80 kilometers or Vanderpool in a couple cases, it doesn't make for an exciting race. And if you watched Liège-Bastogne-Liège men's race, and then you watched the Liège-Bastogne women's race, the women's race in Flanders and Liège was much more exciting. It was very balanced, and that's really great for the women's sport, and I think for the sport in general, that the women's, you know, when the men's race is dominated, maybe the women's race isn't, and vice versa.
Let me ask Will an interesting question. I think there was a little bit of a backlash during his day to Merckx being too dominant. There's some people that did not like it. Famously in some Giro 1969 or something, whenever it was, I believe, a spectator ran out and punched him in the gut. He had to retire. Will, do you think somebody should run out and punch Pogacar in the gut?
Well, it depends how cocky Pogacar is being. You know, if he's attacking every stage, then maybe. But otherwise, it feels like maybe a bit too far. We'll see.
Careful, Interpol is listening to this.
Tom, have you, maybe last question before we ask who our second, third rung are on the podium. Tom, have you ever had overzealous fans in your race, the Tour of Wisconsin, get in the way of the race? Or are they just, or is it more people that are just clueless as to what's going on, the bigger problem?
Our problem here is sometimes we have overserved fans being in Wisconsin that might stray onto the course. So we use a lot of hard barricades to protect that.
Like, you're talking about cheese, right? Early,
you know, on a 100-mile stage in the Alps, they can't put up fence everywhere. So, they can have problems with overzealous fans. And again, the nationalism when Merckx was winning in Italy, or in France, that was a lot of that going on.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Let's go second and third step on the podium after Pogacar. Let's start with Mitch.
I'm going for the old-timers podium following Pogacar. I'm going to call Geraint Thomas second and Romain Bardet third.
Okay, all right. Will, how about you?
I'm going to follow with that. Geraint Thomas second, I think, with the strength of the Ineos team and like he's always been, especially two decently long time trials, I think he's going to do well. And for third, you know, I really wanted to say Bardet as well, but just for the differing opinions, I'll go with O'Connor on this one.
All right, Tom, what about you? Second and third place.
I'm going to go with one of Will's picks. I'm going to go with O'Connor in second and Lopez in third. Juan Pedro Lopez.
Juan Pedro. All right. Well, to keep this interesting, I'll pick some different riders, at least in this part. Maybe not in our fantasy league here later. I'm going to pick the cat killer here for the third step, Tiberi. There's something about Tiberi. I forget what the story was, but he got in trouble for cats in some reason. And he'll get third, I'll say. You know what? Actually, I'll put him in second. What the heck? I'll put him in second. And in third, I will go with Utebrooks. Jim throws up his hands. Jim, who do you got?
Well, yeah, I was going to go Utebrooks and Tiberi second and third.
Oh, there we go.
And it's because of the cool names. The other one is Dainese. Yeah, that's a cool name too. It's like mayonnaise. So I thought he's probably going to be up there too.
There you go.
But yeah, Utebrooks. Really, really big fan of Utebrooks' name and Tiberi.
Yeah. Let's say the most French sounding name in the peloton. I want Will to pronounce it. It's the first rider on our list. We haven't talked about Hill. Will, talk about
Hare Pientré.
You've got to pronounce all three names.
Aurelien Hare Pientré.
That's
decent.
Okay,
yeah. Decent. I'll take it.
But yeah, we haven't talked about him. So we want something for him, too.
We call him
or his brother.
We call him APP. I'm down with APP. I picked him last ride here for him, and I got some points from him last year. Well, let's wrap up because we've got to get to our fantasy league here, which only our beyond the paywall people get to listen to here. please buy that subscription if you want that. But we got to get to that. So thanks, Mitch.
You bet. And my parting shot will be, and you'll appreciate how I just used the term parting shot. I've done a little checking while you were talking, and Antonio Tiberi was fined for shooting a cat that belonged to the San Marino Minister of Tourism.
It was with an airsoft gun, just to be clear.
Oh, okay.
All right. Well, with that cat news, let's wrap this up. Thanks again, Mitch. Like I said, thanks again, Tom. We've got a guy that actually rode this race. That's we're fortunate enough to have somebody in our neighborhood that did that.
and he can I can still mess up the picks.
Yeah, yeah.
Regardless, so doesn't matter.
And I'm fortunate to have my son here. He knows about this stuff just as well. And we got Jim, who doesn't know anything. So let's wrap it up, and we'll talk to the cycling related fans here in about 6 weeks or 8 weeks time for the tour. And next week, a regular podcast. So, all right, thank you very much, guys.
Join us next time on the Bait and Switch podcast when we talk with Dungeons & Dragons historical expert, Ben Riggs.
You've made it to the end of another Bait and Switch podcast. Spread the word.